Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
I wish I knew more than what I know. About you now, I know you like fruits, amusement parks too, staying up all night, sharing good times with you, listening to Ramon's song. I just let her go, but nothing went wrong. Instead, I'm alright. The times we were cool, those times in school, I recall them now. Oh, sharing good times with you, walking down by the park. Oh, I haven't seen you since then. Just one thing I'm sure of, my heart belongs to you,
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. Very special all food and drink episode today because it's a big time for food in New York City right now.
I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
And the other half, Greg Bresnitz. And today we have Leslie back on for the Manhattan Cocktail Classic for the third year in a row.
Don't worry, you can keep typing.
Yeah, you keep typing.
You can keep working until we need you.
We were literally just tapping on our shoulder. We actually might just cut in last year's interview and just went like dub over 2011-2012. But right now, sitting across from us is Naomi from Beast from Portland.
Welcome.
Welcome. Hey. I think that you might be not only our first Northwest chef, but potentially the whole West Coast. So
we had what's his name from Stumptown from Murder City Devils.
That's not a chef though.
I guess not.
When I went to school at University of Oregon, I literally was introduced as like Greg from the East Coast. I had the whole Mid-Atlantic seaboard, the Northeast, I had to represent the whole thing. So pressure's back on.
All right.
So welcome.
Thanks.
Welcome.
Thank you, guys.
First and foremost, Naomi is in town because she's nominated for a James Beard Award.
Woo-hoo!
Not your first nomination.
No.
Not your first time at the dance.
Not my first rodeo.
Not your first rodeo. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you're nominated for?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not nominated for the entire West Coast, but Best Chef Northwest is the category that I'm nominated for this year.
Amazing. And you and there's like two other Portland chefs, correct?
Yeah, two other Portland chefs and two Seattle chefs.
Amazing. And Nostrano's one of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Kathy.
Which I've eaten at, which was also, we went for the...
Yeah, I know. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Well...
Is there camaraderie?
There's a lot of camaraderie, actually. I was sitting getting my hair done for the event and I was texting with... I was texting with Chris Israel from Gruner and Kathy Wims from Nostrano. Great people. Just, you know, yeah. So that's a little weird, you know? Your buddies.
Yeah, but you'd rather... Would you rather lose to someone that you like than someone you hate?
For sure. Yeah, we all like each other.
That's
even
great.
The Seattle chefs I like, so it's great.
So the first question I want to ask you is, why Portland?
Ooh.
So...
Yeah. I mean, why Portland? You mean, like, national food scene stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it, like, you know, as I've said, I went to school in Oregon, and farm to table was... it was farm to table before it was farm to table growing up there, like in late 90s, early 2000, where they just talked about where their food came from.
Yeah.
And when I got to New York, it was still years later before it became a thing.
Like, you mean like the Portlandia episode where they talk about the chicken?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously.
I mean, it's without fail anywhere in the West Coast. You'll see like Chidori chicken, everything. Like, it's just...
It's true.
It's just... That's just what it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's pretty much a natural sort of evolution of how things are there, because, you know, the farms that we buy our produce from really are, like, only, you know, 50 or 100 miles away. So, you know, by effect, we're trying to acknowledge the farmers that are bringing us stuff, and it sort of just turns out that this whole farm-to-table thing, you know, evolved that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, before it was, like, cool to do that or whatever.
Yeah.
But really, in the end, it's about the product, and I think we're super lucky because in the Pacific Northwest, we have pretty badass, you know, farms and cool ingredients being grown and a decently long growing season. I mean, we're not like Northern California, which I think, you know, sort of started that whole like farm to table, you know, you got like your Alice Waters and shit down in Berkeley. So, ooh, I don't know if I can say that, but
yeah,
you know,
it's internet radio.
Oh yeah, good, cool. Yeah. Fuck, no, just kidding.
Yeah, press away.
Yes. So, I think Portland is a natural place for the farm to table thing to happen because the farms are really close.
But so how does, you know, living in New York, and obviously it's like so much is based out of here, but how do you feel like Portland kind of came into the national or international food scene, how it like entered the consciousness?
Well, I'm not really sure when it happened. I do remember an article that came out in the New York Times Magazine in 2005 after I opened Gotham Building Tavern, which is an old restaurant I used to have. And there was a mention, like, the whole thing was called A Tale of Two Portlands. And they did, like, the Portland, Maine versus
I remember
Portland,
that article.
Oregon
yeah. yeah, I remember.
And it was like, I think that that's around the time, I feel like, when it started happening more often, that there was the Portland food scene started getting mentioned really regularly in national media. And I know that, you know, particularly the New York Times seems to have a real affinity for Portland.
I mean, New York Times is probably one of the biggest champions of the Portland food scene.
I think so.
Both the Times also did, yeah, they also did articles in following years on Portland, Maine, called like the Other Portland.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is
so they basically made us the premier Portland.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Hey,
we'll take it.
Hey, well done.
Thanks.
So, well done. Tell our listeners who might not be aware about the history of Beast.
All right, cool. Well, Beast is a very small 24-seat restaurant in Northeast Portland, so it's kind of in a quadrant, deep corner pocket, kind of known as the Alberta Arts District. So it's a little bit like funkier. And, you know, it was a place that we opened because, you know, as a lot of restaurants in Portland are chef owners. And so you see a lot of restaurants happening in the periphery of town, in the places where the rent's a little bit less expensive.
Right.
And, you know, the chefs are mostly like pretty young and, you know, mostly chef owners. So that was where we could afford to open up. And we created this little thing. And I actually honestly thought like no one would come. You know, it was like far away, and I guess it's kind of considered to be a little bit expensive. But Beast is a fixed menu.
Please explain what expensive.
Oh God,
is.
I know it's really no, kind no,
just
of embarrassing.
Say just say it. Just what is a meal for two with drinks gonna run you?
It's $100
for two people.
No, per person.
Oh, so, I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, it's not that
even bad. That. And so it's six courses and
yeah, it's six courses. It's $75 for the meal, $35 for the wine pairing, which we try to get everybody to do because it's a pretty great wine pairing. I don't know.
It's rare.
I have to pass because I'm pretty terrible at drinking wine. It's whiskey, yeah. Bourbon, tequila, fine, but red wine will just, a glass will put me down.
Yeah. Well, so, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm all right to admit that. I'll put that on air.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm embarrassed. That, by the way, that is Greg admitting that.
Okay, yes.
Can I drink
wine?
Greg
Brasnes, you're yeah. safe. Okay. Maybe
thank
not
you.
From
and that's
brother.
Crazy that your wine
pairing. I literally just got hugs from everybody. Thank you, guys. Thank
your
you.
Wine pairing is cheaper than your food because a lot of times, especially in New York, the wine pairing is equal, if not more expensive than
we
the
should
food.
Raise the price. We don't make very much money on our wine, but you know, like.
Please don't blame us for people in Portland.
No, but I'm
for
saying.
Yeah.
But after Snacky Tunes, we decided to raise the price.
But isn't in a small operation like yours, aren't the drinks where you make your biggest margin?
Supposedly, but you know, we're not serving cocktails, and cocktails is really traditionally where a restaurant makes their most money, but we are moving our restaurant. So you asked about the kind of the history of mm-hmm. Beast, and you know, it started out in 2007. My sous chef, Mike Paredes, is actually actually here with us today in the room.
Hey-o. Woo.
Hey, Micah.
You got that third cup of coffee going?
So, you know, she's been cooking with me for 7 years now. So, you know, we started back, 2006. We started getting ready for this. We did some dinners in my backyard over the summertime. Right. We did these underground dinners, and then we moved it to a legit operation and started doing this six-course fixed menu stuff, which, you know, like I said, I had lots of nightmares before it opened and after it opened, even, that no one would ever come and that it was going to be like, whatever, just close down really fast or something.
That's so amazing that you would pour your entire life into something that you think was going to be a failure.
Well, I thought it was going to fail, but just like,
I walked outside, there's a ton of restaurants over there.
They came kind of after us, yeah.
And like a upscale baby boutique.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which I stared at while I was waiting for my cab.
So do you feel that you're the anchor of this area? Because you said that everything opens on the periphery. Are there certain restaurants that are the seed that germinates an area?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely feel that way. I mean, a lot of people come in, came in on the heels of Beast opening, and but I'm trying to get back to your just original question, which is a little bit about like how does it work? You know, I mean, it's like six courses, kind of Frenchy or French inspired, but yeah, it's all Northwest like ingredients we get at the market and stuff.
And does the menu change every week?
Yeah, it does. It changes every week.
And
actually.
When do you write it?
Right before we change it.
No, but I mean, like, do you go to the market and then you write it? Or do you go to the market with an idea?
It depends. It's like, it works in two ways. In the off season, which is just a few months in the wintertime, where there's maybe like... Well, actually, they did a year-round market this year in Portland. It was the first year that we had a market all year round. But there's this time in the winter where it's just like kale and potatoes and onions and mushrooms. And so those menus kind of write themselves in some ways because it's like there's not that much going on, right?
Right.
In the times in spring and summer and fall when there's so much abundant produce, we tend to head to the market, check it out, and like Saturday afternoon or Sunday or Monday, we write the menu. Micah and I sit down and just like talk it over, and you know, she has her things that she does on the menu. She, you know, and I have the things that I focus on, and she does all the pastry work. I can't do pastry stuff, so.
That goat cheese ricotta with the disc in there was like, I finished mine and then finished the person across the table from me. It was kind of dipping it as we were walking out, so it was awesome. Yeah. And the other thing that people have told me about that's like a must-have is your veggie tasting menu.
Oh, yeah.
So what's the deal with that?
Well, that's kind of funny. I mean, like, one of the reasons we came up with the name Beast is just we wanted to really, like, it's kind of calls out as a warning signal to, like, vegans and vegetarians in Portland. Like, hey, if you stop by here and expect to have a, you know, kind veggie meal.
It's tofu scramble.
It's you can get that next door across the street, though.
I'm sure, yeah.
Basically, we just kind of wanted to make sure people were aware, you know, this is a fixed menu, there's no choices, and there's going to be meat, you know. And then we started feeling like, there were people that were like, oh, I want to come to Beast so badly, but my girlfriend's a vegetarian, and you know, usually I just said to those people, like, well, you should come with someone else.
Burn. You should get rid of her.
Why is she your girlfriend?
Yeah.
No, and then I just, you know what? As chefs, it's funny. We are known as sort of a meat place, like meat-centric, but we really focus a lot on our vegetables, and hopefully you experienced that when you were there.
And the polenta was amazing.
Mm. It had foie gras on it.
No. I was about to say,
stop the ban.
Wait, is the ban going all the way up to you?
I thought it was California. It's not, but it's like they're getting, you know, in the ban, I think that they'll probably shut down one of the facilities.
They tried to do the same thing in Chicago.
Yeah, no, it's not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. And guess what? If they do ban it, then people just were getting fined. Like, people just didn't take, like, okay.
Yeah, thanks for
Thank you. It's the high, it's the big, biggest markup we have, so it's great.
Anyway, so we are kind of produce-driven in that, like, you know, that's where, like, the meat is easy. Like, the meat's like, oh, hey, it's going to be a lamb week this week, or it's going to be, you know, Poussin or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, there's only so many ways to prepare those things. But with vegetables, it's like there's thousands of different things to do. And so we just got excited about like doing like about once a month or, you know, maybe once every couple months we do a vegetarian dinner. And they're very popular because even with people that eat meat, I mean, it's like, come on, vegetables are delicious.
No, vegetables are really great, especially the depth of flavor that you can get out of, you know, if you think about a raw onion to a purely caramelized onion and what's in between all of that versus, don't get me wrong, love steak, but there gets to the point where there's
steak is a steak. Yeah.
I know exactly what a good piece of steak tastes like.
I've always contended, like, a lot of the, when I went to Vetri and did their tasting menu, and the best thing I had on the menu were all the vegetables. The lamb was perfect and everything like that, but the things that surprised me was, like, a potato, truffle, squid ink puree. That was, like...
Mm-hmm. Well, you would hope that at a restaurant at your level or anything like that, the meat's going to be perfect. And so then it's just, what can you do to make it a full plate?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my theory about, like, the meat cooking, you know, it has a lot to do with just keeping it really simple. I mean, people are always coming up to us and saying things like, oh, my God, like, how'd you do this meat? Like, whatever. And I'm like, salt and pepper. And, yeah. And then we cooked it to temp. And I think that, you know, for us, we get to show off a little bit with the veggies. And we get to do that, especially in the vegetarian meals. So we really enjoy that part. A lot of people say, oh, vegetarian meal, I feel so sorry for you, you know. But no, we actually really enjoy doing it.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick musical break, come back and talk about tonight and a few other things. And then we're going to get you out of here so you can get to the dance.
And we want to talk about the music that you play at the restaurant as well.
Yeah.
Oh, I think Micah should sit in the seat then.
Micah, we'll just swing. We got two microphones. We'll swing it over.
Cool.
And then we have Leslie from the Manhattan Cocktail Classic coming up as well. I'll go. It says that you learned your cooking from your mom and your grandma.
Yep.
So if you had to make one tribute dish for each, what would it be?
Ooh. Well, my grandmother, Vivian, is from the South, and she always made pies, actually, with my grandfather. He would do the latticework crust. He was a surgeon, actually, so he would do, like, the super, super thin lattice top, and she would do the filling. And I would have to employ Micah's assistance, for sure. But I would attempt a blueberry pie for my grandmother. And then for my mom, you know, we had a garden growing up, and it was, like, we also just did that sort of like the Portland, Oregon thing. Like, we didn't have chickens, but we had a garden and lots of fresh veggies. And she taught me how to make a souffle really young, so I probably would try to do like a spinach souffle for her.
Awesome. So we talked about before, but the music in the restaurant, I seriously had Shazam up for like half the time, which was embarrassing and awkward for the rest of the thing. But I thought it was really, really great. So, Micah, you said that you set most of the playlist for the restaurant?
Yeah, I just talked.
Yeah, you can just...
Yeah, we slide this one over. We can do that, yeah.
Yeah, it depends on the crowd for sure, so...
Like, you know, and does it depend on the time of the year? Like, what's your, like, ideal? Let's get, like, top five bands to listen to while eating.
I'm gonna have to say Joy Division. Okay. I love Joy Division. Oh, man, sometimes I like to just, like, sneak in a little R. Kelly. So...
Okay.
Yeah, just unbeknownst to the customers. Just, let me think, Harry Nilsson, for
okay.
sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like Arthur Russell as well, and I think that it's pretty palatable, and I'm obsessed with disco, so anytime I can, like put in some, like, early R&B or some, like, Daz Band or Evelyn Champagne King, I'll definitely throw it in there.
I'm into all of that.
Yeah.
So as I know, Leslie's coming up, Naomi, you have to go soon. You have to get ready for the dance. We've got two questions, because I know you've got one and I've got one.
I'm going to type it and see if it's the same one. Go.
Well, I was going to ask, you know, leading into it, how do you feel?
Oh, about tonight?
Yeah.
Well, now I've just, like, started getting the butterflies a little bit, right? Like, I'm sipping on this glass of white wine here, trying to chill out a little
bit.
I do not have a speech prepared, but I'm kind of an off-the-cuff person. I'm pretty sure that if I win, I just need to, you know, thank my daughter for putting up with the pain in the ass of having a chef as a mom, and thank my staff. You know, like, that's pretty much it. But I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty optimistic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Darren?
What are you wearing? Did we talk about that? We didn't talk about it on air.
Oh, we didn't talk about it on air.
No.
Which is why we tend to try to not talk to guests when they show up. Like, sometimes, like, you guys are super awkward, because I'm like, I can't remember if we asked that or not or anything. But yes, what are you wearing?
I am wearing a bright daffodil yellow dress made by a local Portland designer named Adam Arnold. And it's, I think it's going to be really beautiful. It's kind of, we're talking about it as... I think he would hate this, but we called it the mullet earlier because it's got a little short in the front, like business in the front, party in the back,
yeah.
And longer in the back. I like calling it that.
Yeah,
it's kind of more my style.
Oh, yeah, I'm wearing my mullet dress tonight.
Yeah, I'm gonna rock my yellow mullet.
And Leslie, what are you wearing on Friday?
Oh,
yeah.
What am I wearing?
Yeah.
Wow, I sound so fancy now. I'm wearing this beautiful black Stella McCartney dress that I do not own.
Is it one of those rental things?
Well, I'm not even sure if I want to share the secret. I'm not going to name it, but I managed to find this fashion library where magazine photo editors go to pull garments for photo shoots, and they make rare exceptions where they let humans rent
plebeians
us mere mortals rent dresses for red carpet events, and I basically conned my way into convincing them that I was someone worthy of this service. It's a Stella McCartney black gown that I would never in a million years be able to afford, but for one night only.
Awesome. Amazing.
Cool.
Okay, well, Naomi, we're gonna tear you loose, and I'm gonna get you a cab and get you to the ball.
Thank
on
you.
Time.
We'll see you
Thanks,
tonight.
You guys.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Thank you to your posse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, my peeps.
This is the deepest that anyone's ever rolled to Snacky Tune. So,
oh my god.
So well.
Rolled deep.
Yeah, Portland PDX. Rolled deep. And seriously, Beast, amazing. I am highly recommending it to anybody that goes out there, and I will be back there sometime.
Yeah,
this
can
year.
I come? I haven't been to Portland in like a decade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I guess so.
Sisters, come alive. Oh, brothers.
We are joined for the third time. Yes?
Yeah, third time.
Leslie Townsend, the founder, runner, visionary for the Manhattan Cocktail Classic. Leslie, welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Thanks. Good to be back.
So it's 2012. Bigger and better this year?
Oh, and it is. It just keeps on getting bigger. The better, we'll have to wait and see where we are as of Tuesday, May 15th, when all this craziness is over. But I think we're poised for a pretty spectacular festival this year.
Let's talk about the basic details of the ins and outs of the festival before we get into the new meat and potatoes.
Sure. So it's a five-day festival. There are about 100 events. They're all individually ticketed and open to the public. Tickets are available for, well, a lot of the events are sold out, but tickets for events that are not yet sold out are still available on our website at ManhattanCocktailClassic.com. In addition, there is a invite-only trade conference this year that is being hosted at the Andaz Fifth Avenue Hotel, which is open by invitation only to members of the trade and media. And there are a whole bunch of other fabulous events and activities and tastings and panel discussions and presentations that are happening there.
What made you want to expand it to having a more sort of panel trade conference type of aspect?
Well, in truth, the festival just grew to such a critical mass that it became important for us to more to better distinguish between our different constituent audiences. Up until this point, we had been kind of playing both sides and just doing a bunch of events that were all open to one and all trade and consumers alike. And at this point, you know, the festival audience has grown to something on the order of, you know, 10,000 plus attendees. And, you know, there's some programming that just really is better suited for members of the trade versus things that are much more obviously consumer oriented. So we wanted to just sort of clearly delineate, okay, this stuff is for the trade. This stuff is for trade and consumers, and to better service both audiences.
And part of what you're doing this year is that you're also doing not charity, but I think you said that you talked last year about, just looking at the website, you have like a different charities that are going to be part of this?
Well, so the way the structure of the festival is set up, so there are certain events that we produce centrally, such as the opening night gala at the New York Public Library,
right.
And then the industry invitational, which is the trade conference. But then all of the other events that take place at bars and restaurants and galleries and distilleries, those are all actually individually produced by brands, bartenders, bar owners, etc.
Right.
So the way those events are set up, basically, that ticket revenue is not going back to us. It's going back to whomever is putting the event together. And in many cases, the people organizing the events are putting a portion of that back to a charitable cause or a foundation or whatever. But you know, most importantly, we just feel like, you know, everyone has a cause that they want to support. Who are we to sort of dictate what it is people are doing?
Right.
So with this sort of, you know, open source format of the festival, it allows different people to do things for whatever cause is near and dear to their heart.
So what are you most excited about? I know it's like saying pick your favorite child, but what are you really looking forward to? What events? Which things?
Well, so obviously the gala is a pretty cliched answer and also mean since you can't get tickets anymore. But actually what I'm most excited about is we brought on board a new digital marketing agency this year, Clearheart Digital.
Mm-hmm.
And we are debuting some pretty fabulous new technology at the gala. If you've heard of NFC, near field communication
technology. I have not.
So you've seen like at Duane Reade's little things that say tap your Android, you know, and you can pay with Google Wallet. That's being powered by NFC technology. It's basically two microchips that are talking to each other at close distances. Right. So you might have seen there was this awesome we sent out a press release last week, and it got picked up by Gothamist. And the headline was, Manhattan Cocktail Classic invents magical bracelet that tracks your booze.
That's awesome.
But basically, we have. My lovely marketing agency figured out how to embed NFC microchips into these little, you know, silicone wristbands, which then are hooked up to your unique profile. And so then there are the readers placed at all of the different bars at the gala. So as you're going through the event, you just tap your wristband at each bar and it automatically stores the information of which cocktail you're drinking.
Oh, it's amazing.
As I'm sure you know, as someone who attends a lot of these events, the biggest problem is how the hell are you supposed to keep track of
I remember everything.
Right. You know, it's actually a real problem of how do you keep track of all of these amazing cocktails, let alone the recipes, let alone the bartender information when you're going to an event like this. So first, it solves that problem. On Monday morning, everyone who uses their NFC bracelet is going to get a customized email sent to them from Tasting Table with all of the recipes from every cocktail that they sampled at the gala.
That's amazing.
But that's not all. So then, if you go one step further and link up your bracelet to your social media profiles, to your Facebook and Twitter accounts.
I'm aware of those places.
There's a lot of other cool stuff that you can do. So, for example, at the requisite ridiculous photo booths, you know, where you put on silly props and hats and get your photo taken at parties, there will be an NFC reader there. So you can simply tap your wristband and the photo that you've just had taken will be automatically posted to your Facebook wall.
Love it.
There will be other things like sending out auto tweets of, you know, I just sampled the bloody blah. You know, lots of other ways that this gets integrated.
Love that drink.
Into, yeah. Really good. So anyway, we've taken the entire experience of going to a big boozy cocktail party and tried to, you know, elevate it to, you know, through technology and make the whole experience, you know, a bit more memorable, if you will.
That's so amazing. Yes, the added memory is great. But those are things that are happening at the gala. What are the smaller, who's giving a talk, which bars are doing thing, what's going on that you're excited about?
Oh, let's see. I'm excited about the Tiki Tour because it involves Staten Island. This is the first year that we're doing a Manhattan Cocktail Classic event on Staten Island, which is very exciting. So we can now officially say that we are in 4 out of the 5 boroughs. Next year, we will get to the Bronx.
It's too bad, because the only thing I know about the Bronx is the Bronx Brewing Company.
Yeah.
I don't really know too many.
Well, there's got to be something.
What's the bar scene like at the zoo?
At the zoo? It's a little bit hairy.
Oh. You have to scale back?
Yeah.
To the zoo. Okay.
Good. Right. Honestly, there's so many great events that are taking place this year. The Gentleman's Cocktail Crawl, for those people who manage to drag themselves out of bed on Saturday morning.
Like what time?
It's a crawl. It starts at 1:30 in the afternoon. Totally respectable time to get up and get your wits about you. It goes from 1:30 to 6:30 p.m. And basically, it's the sophisticated cocktail crawl. And also, I should mention that it is open to men and women. The title is just tongue-in-cheek. But anyway, so instead of it being, you know, boozy, you know, dive bars, we're taking this on a tour of some of New York's greatest hotel bars, and doing signature cocktails and lots of fun giveaways, and, you know, we're elevating the crawl. So that's on Saturday, and there are still tickets available for that. Another event that I'm hugely excited about is on Monday night. One of our headlining sponsors, Bowmore Single Malt Scotch, is doing a special performance of Sleep No More at the McKittrick Hotel. I don't know if you've yet.
I've been there.
You've been there. God, it's just, you know, oh yes. I have still not figured out a way of appropriately explaining what Sleep No More is to someone who hasn't been there.
It's immersive theater. You're living within a world of a play.
Right, but normally when someone says immersive theater, interactive theater, like my skin starts to crawl and I run the other direction. This is cool. Like, this is awesome.
How many times have you gone?
I've only gone once.
I've gone once and I was hanging out before and we brought a flask with us in there.
Well, right. So to this point, so my one gripe when I did go, you know, there is a bar when you first come in and then, you know, you can stop there on your way out again. But, you know, call me a lush. I really kind of wanted to booze it up a little bit more. You know,
I did. It makes it way tougher to follow, though. It's adding an enigma wrapped inside a conundrum to an already mystery.
True, but, you know, that's the way I think one should best enjoy it. So anyway, point being, this is going to be a special spirited performance of Sleep No More.
Saturday, you said?
On Monday night.
Monday night.
What other big things? Another unfortunately sold out event, but Campari's big aperitivo cocktail competition finale at the New York Distilling Company out in Williamsburg at Alan Katz's lovely distillery and at the Shanty. That's going to be a fabulous, fabulous event.
I still haven't been there yet. Have you been? I've walked past it.
Yes, I've been meaning to go, but I've been producing this stupid festival. I'm excited to go. I'm a big jerk and a bad friend for not going there yet. Alan, I am sorry. I will be there on Sunday. Yeah, it's amazing. We've got some events. I'm really happy at just sort of the breadth of events and how, you know, the number of events that are taking place in Brooklyn. You know, little known fact that most of the folks running this festival live in Brooklyn, despite the name.
That's not a secret.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see more events taking place in Brooklyn. You know, we got some events in Red Hook, which make me really happy. I'm truly just happy. The whole point of setting up the festival in this way was to allow as many different entities as possible to become a part of the festival and to, you know, say, hey, we want to do an event and we want it to be part of this awesome thing and to sort of make it happen. So
no, I think it's a lot of fun, and I think you guys, I think we said it last year, but you hit at a really good time when drinks have become a part of pop culture.
Yeah.
But you've also been able to, how do I say, adapt with the changes of pop culture. I think there was a little bit of a pushback on the cocktail, but you have found a way to really highlight all the different aspects of it as it fits into different genres and cultures and parts of society that isn't just, let's make another $17 cocktail or something like that.
Totally. You know, from the beginning, you know, since this is, obviously we mentioned there's the whole trade conference, but, you know, the rest of it, this is a consumer-facing festival, and this is for a much broader audience than just the, you know, self-described cocktail nerds. You know, that group is very small and finite, and we're trying to reach a much broader audience. And the way that we're trying to reach them is through all of the other points of interest. So whether that's music or theater or art or technology, you know, we're trying to convert the people who would never be queuing up outside of Death & Co. You know,
no.
We're trying to make it approachable, to make it accessible to a much broader audience of people who would definitely not describe themselves as cocktail nerds.
Yeah, this is definitely not the inside baseball cocktail events.
No, not.
So let's talk about the gala.
Yes.
The Friday night gala. I know about the wristbands.
Right.
I know last year you wouldn't give us that many details before. Can you give us any details about what's happening this year?
Yeah. well, let's see. So this year, I have this tally somewhere. I think we have 6 different live bands performing. We have 1 taxidermied grizzly bear.
Of course.
We have 5,000 oysters. We've got, what else? A temporary tattoo parlor. We did this awesome thing.
Hold on. Stop. 5,000 oysters?
Yeah.
Amazing.
They really go quickly. But
yeah, they do. But 5,000 is a lot.
It is. There are a lot of people that come to this party.
Yeah.
Right. Temporary tattoo parlor.
You're not doing like the real Sailor Jerry's.
Yeah, that's
tattoo
at the biggest, booziest party of the year. That would be a lot of waivers that would needed to be signed.
I mean, I think that they do great work, and I love all Sailor Jerry stuff. But I wonder what the ratio of the people who get those Sailor Jerry tattoos on site at events, and then like the next morning, they're like, "What the? What?"
Honestly, you know, I've my lawyers scare the, you know.
Oh my god! I know the fact that you're trying to like put drinks and foods inside of people already is enough for you to just have enough liability.
Yeah, I pretty much just live in fear all the time. But so yes, it's a temporary. Actually, it was a super cool thing that we did with Flavor Pill. We did a an online tattoo design contest on Facebook over the course of about a month. And the top, 5 or 6 designs won free tickets to the gala. And then those designs are getting printed and, you know, given out and applied at the gala to attendees.
Nice.
Yeah.
what is the protocol for food for the gala? Because I know it's been different from year to year. Would you recommend eating before this year?
So this is a cocktail party. It starts at 10 o'clock. People should definitely eat dinner before they come here. It's always been a cocktail party. We always do our best to serve, you know, a good amount of food, but... No, for the love of God, don't show up to a cocktail party at 10 o'clock with an empty stomach. That is a recipe for one nasty hangover.
Yeah.
But no, of course, there will be, you know, lots of great snacks, you know, oysters and boozy ice cream and boozy popsicles. And it's amazing, actually, how many of the food items actually have booze in it.
Yeah, it's like oh, I'm eating all this food and I'm getting drunker. I don't understand it.
Yeah, exactly. But no, definitely. And actually, we're doing this other, I love my marketing agency. We're doing this other great thing with, Grub With Us. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I'm familiar with Grub With Us.
Right. This whole, with Grub With Us and Edible Manhattan, a whole dinner series, before the gala, these really awesome discounted dinners at a bunch of great restaurants in Midtown. So if you don't have dinner plans yet.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you can.
What places? With the exception of maybe Keens, I rarely know where to eat in Midtown. Have you ever eaten at Keens?
Yeah, Keens is amazing. Oh my God, all of the...
By the way, Keens is not the best place to have a pre... I mean, those drinks, it's like a triple shot Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Oh, I lost my internet connection.
It's fine.
Anyway, if you go onto our Facebook page, we have the whole Grub With Us section. And yeah, there are a lot of great participating restaurants and doing really good deals. And it's a great way to hook up with people before heading off to your black tie event.
Oh, I'm so excited. I have my suit. But I only have like one suit, but I can get away with it because I have like different shirts.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's fine.
I don't remember what you wore last year.
It'll be the same. It'll be the exact same suit because it hasn't been a banner year for me to get a new suit.
Yeah. I have to admit, I'm very envious of that. I really would just love to wear the same thing each year.
I would like to have a new suit. I thought I was going to get a new suit for... Because, you know, I always have the Beard Awards and then this, but whatever. No one remembers. Yeah. I wear the suit like 3 times a year.
Yeah.
The funny thing about this year, but we'll let you go after this, is can you talk a little bit about the black market for the tickets and sold-out event?
Yeah, you know, of course, I have Google Alerts set up, so every time someone posts tickets for sale on Craigslist, I get this little Google alert. And I'll admit, you know, I'm in no way officially endorsing this, but it's just been kind of awesome to see, you know, the you know, market value creeping up closer and closer. I think the craziest price that I saw was like someone asking, you know, tickets are regularly $150 plus taxes and everything. Probably, I think it comes to like $170 something. Someone was trying to get like $300 per ticket.
Looking at it now. Bonkers. No, hold on, wait. It's 2 tickets.
No, there have been a bunch, but someone was ballsy enough to go on there and demand $300. It might have since changed.
I wonder if we have some scalpers out front going, need tickets.
Seriously. We saw, I was, I felt so proud. We got picked up on, there was an indexing on StubHub. I don't know that anyone actually like put tickets up there, but I was like, whoa, StubHub.
Yeah, they get, it's, I think that's a real tipping point to know that when you have a successful event or something is when it starts popping up on StubHub or it's just those blanketed spam websites where it just fills in what you search for in the different fields.
Exactly. Yeah, you know you've made it to the big leagues.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you.
Next year, we will see you, but we will see you this Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe try to seek to sleep no more.
Yes.
What are all the nuts and bolts? What's the website? What's everything? What's Twitter?
Right. So the website is www.manhattancocktailclassic.com. Our Twitter is cocktailclassic. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/manhattancocktailclassic. Sign up. Lots of good stuff still available.
It's awesome. Well, we'll be there. We're super excited. You'll be there.
I will.
I always see you for about a second.
Yeah.
And then you are whisked away into 1,000 different directions.
Yeah. I'm working on cloning myself.
If it works for us. And if you need to find me, I'll just be camped out at the Oyster Bar.
Awesome.
Just be like, one more. all right. Well, thank you so much for coming. Super excited for the Great Guga Muga that's coming up May 19th and 20th. We're involved with the Extra Muga with the Big Gay Ice Cream guys who just popped up. I think Doug just showed me his nipple. Through the Glass Window. We are going to play a song in honor of that, Rich Girl by Hall & Oates, and as a shout out to the headliner for the Sunday night. And tickets are going on sale for our smaller barbecue at Good Company with Fetsal and Saint Assam May 16th, Turing Machine DJing. They're going up on Gilt this Wednesday, so keep your eyes peeled. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to Roberta's. Shout out to Mom for Mother's Day, which is coming up. And go Flyers. Let's see you get back into the series.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Peace.